Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio. You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio.
Hello, hello, hello.
Hello, hello, hello.
Hey,
Okay, let's try it again and go to the phones. Todd, are we on the air?
I can hear you loud and clear now.
Okay, well, whatever Blog Talk Radio's issues are, thankfully they've been resolved 10 minutes into the show. I highly recommend Blog Talk Radio if you want to just take your money and throw it out the window. Anyway, folks, let's get to our Monday Night Raw report. You can call us up at 347-215-8486, 347-215-8486 if you'd like to talk to us live, if the phones work. And you can hit us up in the chat room, and you can get questions, comments, and opinions there as well. Well, we started out this week, ladies and gentlemen, with what really should have been a very boisterous Monday Night Raw. Usually when you go to the UK, it's almost like the night after WrestleMania. You get a really boisterous, loud crowd. We didn't really get that. In the beginning, a little bit, things settled down. It really wasn't your typical UK crowd. We started things off with The Miz. And The Miz comes out to do Miz TV and announces that his guest is Roman Reigns. Now, the interesting thing about this crowd is they didn't boo Roman Reigns, but they certainly got behind Roman Reigns' opponent at Money in the Bank, Elias. The whole crowd was cheering Walk with Elias. Roman Reigns had to acknowledge it and basically said, walk with him if you want to walk with a wedding singer or a karaoke guy or whatever. This could have been very bad. This could have been a hijacking of this segment because the crowd certainly was behind at least Elias, not so much Shane McMahon. But I think what happened next was actually pretty clever and on the part of the WWE, a good idea. We talk about continuity a lot, and we often do not get it from the WWE. And I think this time we did, because at some point during the little short interview The Miz did with Roman Reigns, The Miz began acting like the old Miz, saying we should do a buddy cop movie, you know, now that we're buddies and We'd make a great movie team and this, that, and the other thing. And Roman Reigns said, look, this is the old Miz. I didn't come out here to talk to the old Miz. I don't like the old Miz. I'll punch the old Miz in the face. I want the Miz who chased Shane McMahon away with a chair last week. I want the Miz who stood up for his dad. Now, this is a very good thing because usually in the WWE, they don't acknowledge when a guy turns face, they don't acknowledge his heel actions at all. It's like it never happened. Suddenly all the faces love him. Everybody gets along wonderfully. Nothing's mentioned about all the horrible things he did. This was an exception to that. And as far as continuity and logic is concerned, that made things a lot better. The Miz then played off that and said, well, is that the Miz you want? And the crowd was definitely on his side, and he said, well, you know, I've learned over the years you have to earn respect, and I think maybe I'm beginning to have earned that. Shane McMahon's never earned any of it. He then actually works in pretty well that Shane McMahon is going to go down quicker than his dad from a Superman punch. And the segment's actually not too bad. Could have been hijacked, but they saved it. Then Shane comes out, and he says, well, you have to remember that I'm not just Shane McMahon, I'm your boss. And as your boss, I'm telling you that Miz TV is hereby canceled, and then Bobby Lashley and Baron Corbin attack. It was a brief attack, and what ends up happening is the good guys fight them off, and at the end, and yeah, look, it's a typical segment, but it's not a bad segment to open up Raw, and then Shane says, well, we're going to have a tag team match, which, of course, we knew. And we're going to have it right now. And even though the fans could care less about Bobby Lashley and Baron Corbin, and we're going to get to that later on in the show, I think they do care about The Miz, and to an extent, Elias. What am I thinking? Not Baron Corbin, Elias. The fans do care about Elias, and they do care about The Miz. And I think they care a little bit about Shane, and they probably care a little bit about this steel cage match. So Shane stays at ringside, and we know there's going to be some shenanigans there. And is the match good? Eh. Look, the fans just do not care about Bobby Lashley. You can put Bobby Lashley in any team you want. You can have Bobby Lashley stand on his head and do push-ups. The way you have booked Bobby Lashley, no one cares. No one cares. First he's with Baron Corbin, then he's with Elias, then he's with Drew McIntyre. They don't know what to do with Bobby Lashley. And obviously the Leo Rush thing is over. And that hurts Lashley a lot. So it's a typical match. It's not a bad match. It's just it's one of those matches where you paint yourself in the corner because you know Elias can't lose, Roman can't lose, The Miz can't lose. I guess Lashley could lose, but that's probably iffy. So you know there's going to be some gimmick ending, and there was. Shane McMahon obviously making sure that Roman Reigns can't make the tag. It ends up in a disqualification, a beatdown. Eventually, Roman and The Miz get the better of it. And, you know, it's a pretty typical opening, Mike, but it wasn't a horrible opening, really. And there were some indications that the WWE is at least trying to use a little bit of continuity and logic.
Right. And the thing is when he said we're canceling Miz TV, you could audibly hear a groan, like a boo from the audience, because the audience likes Miz TV, you know.
Yeah.
The fans like Miz TV. Miz is personable. Miz has got charisma about him. The fans like him, you know. And when somebody says we're going to cancel Miz TV, yeah, they canceled it for a match. But if it was just him saying we're going to cancel Miz TV, just to cancel Miz TV, you know, that would have gotten that. It got a pop, and it would have gotten an even bigger pop in my mind.
Well, the good thing about The Miz is that The Miz understands, I think, being primarily an actor before a wrestler. I think The Miz understands that he can't totally lose the old Miz if he wants the new Miz to be popular. In other words, once in a while, The Miz still shows that arrogant, self-absorbed side of him. And if he pretends, oh, that all went away, I'm not anything like that ever at any time, fans wouldn't buy it. But fans still see The Miz as a guy that you say, well, he fights it now. He realizes he's got to be a little more humble and have a little more decorum. But it's still in there. That old Miz is still in there. And the idea that they showed a little bit of it last night, Todd, to me was important.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, it was like an important part of The Miz right there. Like you said, he could be like a Roddy Piper type, like not going after the bad guys, go after the good. I mean, not go after the good guys, go after the bad guys, like to get like pull crap on them, like get them back on stuff.
Yeah, you know, that's a good analogy, the Roddy Piper thing, because if Roddy Piper, when he turned face, was totally humble and quiet and, you know, gentleman-like, you would have said, well, come on, that's not Roddy Piper. Roddy Piper was the same guy. It's just he did the things to different people. And that's sort of The Miz. I fully expect The Miz to really pull out the stops in this steel cage match, and I think we'll see some of the quote-unquote old Miz in that match as well. He's not going to turn heel by any stretch, but he's going to use some heel moves, I think, on Shane. And I just enjoyed seeing a little spark of that, letting the fans know I haven't 100% changed just because one thing happened. I'm still, it's still me. So that was good. The match itself, you know, it is what it is. We then get a weird segment where Alexa Bliss is backstage arguing with, I guess, the airport about losing her luggage. And she's saying, I have a four-way match tonight, and I don't even have my ring gear. The week before that, my shoes were all screwed up. I couldn't keep them tied. I lost the match because of that. This is ridiculous. It's the worst thing that's ever happened to me. And enter Nikki Cross, but a very different Nikki Cross. And Nikki Cross is very quiet and soft-spoken and says, what's the problem, you know? And it leads to an exchange between Nikki Cross and Alexa Bliss where Alexa says, well, you know, I don't want to take my problems out on you, but, and Nikki Cross says, no, it's okay. I mean, since I got here, nobody talks to me.
And she says, well, you know, it's not like I didn't want to get to know you, but I've been really busy and this, that, and the other thing. And she explains her problem. And Nikki Cross says, well, maybe you call the McMahons and tell them, you know, you just don't have your outfit and there's nothing you can do about it. And maybe they'll put a replacement in for you. To which Alexa Bliss instantly jumps on it and says, oh, you do that for me? Whereas Nikki Cross really didn't volunteer. And Nikki Cross seems kind of taken aback by it and says, well, I mean, I guess so. If it's okay, I guess I would. And she says, oh, great, you're the best. I'll get that cleared with the McMahons. She leaves. But what a lot of people have failed to notice is after Nikki Cross seemed taken aback by, oh, I didn't really mean me, she gives this typical Nikki Cross smile of, I got what I wanted. This is very interesting because later when Nikki Cross comes out, she's very much the old Nikki Cross character. We'll get to that when we get to it. But Mike, I think a lot of people missed that spot and thought, oh, well, that's Alexa Bliss taking advantage of Nikki Cross, which it kind of was. But there's that one moment where Nikki Cross gives that smile of saying, this is exactly what I wanted her to do.
Right. And if this is going to be an interesting character, if this is going to be her character, you know, and that's the thing. And what also stood out to me is, yeah, she has her accent, but she's very well spoken and you can actually understand her, you know,
right.
Nikki Cross. So, I mean, they could potentially have something big with this.
Yeah. And I don't know how they're going to play it. I don't know whether they're going to play it that Nikki Cross is leading Alexa Bliss on and Alexa Bliss doesn't even know it, or Alexa Bliss is eventually going to turn on Nikki Cross. That doesn't sound likely because, again, the Nikki Cross smile at the end of that segment, to me, kind of indicated that Nikki Cross put herself in that position on purpose because she not only wanted to go out in that fatal four-way, she wants Alexa's spot in the ladder match, in the Money in the Bank ladder match. We'll see if anything transpires at all since people can come back and forth tonight on SmackDown, but something's up there. And even if, no matter what storyline they go for, whether Alexa's leading Nikki Cross astray, pretending to be her friend, or Nikki Cross is leading Alexa Bliss astray, pretending to be her friend, it's a storyline, it's a branch on a tree, it's something for Nikki Cross to do. I can't bitch at it. It's fine. Now, the next segment bothers me a little bit. We have watched Mojo Rawley for I don't know how long talk to the mirror, be sort of an introspective, sort of a heel. And when he comes out, it's just basically Mojo Rawley with blue lines on his face. Which is fine. They didn't change his appearance that much. That's fine. But then this is technically his debut on Raw. He's been on Main Event and stuff, but nobody watches. This is the chance to push him if you're going to push him. This is the exact chance you need to make him look strong in his first appearance. And you did just about exactly the opposite. Apollo Crews was decimating him. He didn't get a punch in. Apollo Crews then does that flip, lands weird, supposedly, on his one foot, maybe buckles his knee, goes down in pain. Mojo Rawley just takes advantage of it, picks up a cheap win. It's a really, really, really cheap win. Now, if you're going to push Mojo as a sort of a maniacal, self-absorbed character, he needed a big win. He needed a win that you said, whoa, okay, well, that's impressive. That wasn't it. That was a cheap, wouldn't have won unless the guy got hurt, got lucky, took advantage of an injury. Now, there's types of wrestlers you could use that with, but they're usually the sneaky, devious type wrestlers, not the powerhouse, brawling, you know, slightly unhinged wrestlers. If you really wanted to push Mojo, you could have just had him beat Apollo Crews. No fake injury needed. None of the hype of that, he wouldn't have won if not for business. Just let him win. Just let him win the match. So this one frustrated me because I see that this is going to be one of those things where Mojo Rawley shows up for 2 weeks and then we probably don't see him again for another month and a half, Mike.
Yeah, and that's the thing, you know. This is not the guy to do this with. You would buy this from The Miz or maybe even possibly from somebody like Dolph Ziggler. That he's a good wrestler, but he's a sneaky guy and he could do things like that, you know. But this is Mojo Rawley, what, 250 pounds, very athletic, you know, strong, you know. Yeah, you want to push him. Now, I'm not sure. I mean, it appeared that Apollo injured himself. Do we have anything that says he didn't injure himself?
Yeah, that was definitely a work.
That was a work?
Yep.
Well, I mean, he sold it. Apollo sold it well. So, you know, and actually, if it was done in a different way, you could have bought it because the guy did what he was supposed to do in going after the so-called injured leg, you know. That's what you're supposed to do.
Yeah, but I don't see how it helps Mojo, because what it does is just make it look like he got a lucky victory. Hell, anybody could do that. I could get in there, and if the guy blows his knee out and can't stand up, I suppose I could pin him. You know, so that's not what you want to do with a guy making his debut. I'd have rather seen Mojo lose by disqualification. It would have done more for Mojo's career if the referee had said, we're stopping the match. You win by forfeit because he can't go on. And Mojo said, oh, no, and just attacks. With the announcer saying, he won the match. What the hell more does he want? This guy's injured and he's going after him. What is he, a nut? What is he, a lunatic? You can't have this. He's purposely trying to injure Apollo Crews. He's already won the match. What the hell more does this idiot want? Then if, you know, Crews is beaten up and pummeled after he's injured and the referee's already stopped the match, Mojo can lose that match and still be like, whoa, okay, well, that's a different Mojo. We're going to see a very violent, mean-spirited type guy. But the way we saw this, Mike, it was just like he got a lucky break.
Right, he got a lucky break. Now, you know, maybe that does fit into his character when he said, you know, basically doing the Stuart Smalley thing, you know, where I'm good and damn it, I know I'm good and that stuff, you know, trying to convince himself he's as good as he is, you know, maybe that's how they're going to play this. Yeah, he got lucky, but sometimes it's better to be lucky than good. I don't know.
I guess it's just not a debut that impressed me. It's not a debut that made me say, uh-oh, we're going to see much more of Mojo Rawley in the future, Todd. It just made me think, yeah, okay, here's Mojo back for a month or two.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, I got that feeling. You're going to probably see him for like a month or 2 or 3 months on TV and disappear right after that, and you probably will never see him again on TV or maybe.
I just don't see anything big for him. If you're going to give him the first win he gets, you're going to get that. The first win he gets is against Apollo Crews only by virtue of Apollo Crews supposedly getting injured. That's not giving you a big boost. That's not patting you on the back and saying, we're really going to push you, Mojo. That's saying, well, we're going to have a rematch with Apollo next week. Watch. That's what's going to happen. And if Mojo loses that, it's done. So not a really great debut for Mojo. I think you could have asked for a lot better. We then get Baron Corbin versus Ricochet. But before we get that, we get this weird thing where Sami Zayn is backstage talking to Shane saying, well, after everything that happened to me and I could have been killed, except you weren't, you're on SmackDown the very next night. I think you should strip Braun Strowman of his Money in the Bank opportunity and just give it to me, flat out give it to me. Braun Strowman shows up and says, is this what this is all about? Is this idiot complaining because I threw him in the trash can and blah, blah, blah. Shane says, well, I can't just hand you that opportunity, but I'll tell you what I will do. I guess it was actually Sammy who said, put us in a match. I'll earn it then. And he said, well, he's supposed to be fighting Drew McIntyre, but I guess I could switch it around. Falls count anywhere, no DQ match. and the winner gets the opportunity to go on to Money in the Bank. Well, the minute that was said, we already know, if we're wrestling fans, that Braun Strowman is losing this match. Because there is absolutely no reason to have one if he's not. There's absolutely no reason. Losing this match would just bury Sami Zayn into the, you know, dust. So then obviously I say, well, you know that Drew McIntyre is going to interfere because that Drew McIntyre is obviously showing up and he was supposed to fight Braun Strowman. So that's going to lead to something. So right away I figure Sami Zayn is probably winning this match. And I'm thinking, what has Braun Strowman done? Well, apparently Braun Strowman, according to sources that I have, blew a few spots at WrestleMania and really got some heat backstage. He was blamed for not getting the finish correct. I've watched the match. I don't know what other finish there was. He was obviously supposed to win. And all that was left is the two Saturday Night Live chuckleheads in there. So I don't know what else was supposed to happen, but apparently something was supposed to happen that did not happen. Also, Luke Harper apparently had major heat with him backstage because Luke Harper is saying he was at some point he was supposed to eliminate Mustafa Ali. First off, he kicked Luke Harper, I guess, for real. Just totally potatoed Luke Harper, which Luke Harper wasn't happy about. But then Harper said the way he threw Mustafa Ali out of the ring, had I not got underneath him, he would have been injured. And he almost was injured anyway. He's not being careful with people, and I got injured trying to help Mustafa Ali, make sure Ali wasn't injured. And I guess when Luke Harper went up to him backstage to complain about it, Braun Strowman didn't think he did anything wrong. And it seems to me like Braun Strowman may be suffering a little bit from some backstage problems because they're not promoting him like they used to in any way, shape, or form. So we know that that's happening. And now Baron Corbin comes out to the ring, and he's going to fight Ricochet. And I'm saying to myself, well, maybe this is going to be a double DQ. Other people are going to run in. We don't know what's going to happen. Let's just wait and see. Maybe we'll get a decent match. Well, basically, this match consisted of Ricochet trying to hit all of his high-flying stuff, but Corbin kind of just being a little too big and powerful. And I warned everybody. If you're a regular listener of this show, I warned everybody. Ricochet, Aleister Black has yet to really re-debut. He may tonight. But I warned everybody. I said, you know, they're bringing these guys up from NXT, making them look like world beaters, but give them a month and they'll be dropping matches in the middle of the ring to everybody. So be careful. And that's exactly what they have done. Ricochet is now going to be the new Dolph Ziggler. Give everybody a good fight, impress everybody with his great moves, but in the end, lose. He didn't lose by trickery. He didn't lose by cheating. He didn't lose by a referee's mistake. He was pinned dead center of the ring, which means they think more of Baron Corbin's heel push than they do Ricochet's face push. And this is a mistake, and I'll tell you why. As much as the WWE needs heels, Baron Corbin ain't it. Baron Corbin could pin Roman Reigns, Seth Rollins, AJ Styles in a row, and he is not going to be taken seriously because you have never booked him to be taken seriously. He's always been very beatable. We remember him being very beatable. It's not going to happen. Fans are not going to get behind this who will ever stop Baron Corbin thing because he's been stopped too many times. Those horses have already left the barn. You cannot rebuild Baron Corbin at this point. You cannot rebuild Baron Corbin as a heel without first turning him face. He'd have to have a face run for a little while where he's very successful and then turn heel. But you cannot just say one day Sin Cara is beating him and then the next day nobody can beat him because nobody's buying it. And while they boo him, they don't boo him in the way that you really want to be booed if you're a heel. They boo him like, I don't want to see him. So this proves to me, Mike, that they're trying to make Baron Corbin a main event heel, but I don't think it's going to work. And at the expense of Ricochet, that's really just a shame.
That is really just a shame there. And not that the match was all that bad, but it is a shame. And look, I'll get back to I have a lot more to say about the thing with Strowman in a little while when we actually get to the match, because I have a definite feeling why they did what they did with Strowman, besides the backstage heat he may or may not have.
Yeah, apparently he does. I don't know to what extent. But, Todd, this was weird, because I think if you're a Ricochet fan, this is probably the last thing you wanted to see, is Ricochet just pinned dead center in the middle of the ring by Baron Corbin. I don't think it did Baron Corbin any major good, because the horse has already left the barn and it hurt Ricochet.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said about with guys coming out from NXT in the past, they're gonna bury them on the main roster. And like you said, with the latest example with Ricochet and Aleister Black, I think they should do something. I think they got to do something with something about this, not to bury people.
Well, you know, Ricochet is earmarked for burial, because he's one of these guys that Vince McMahon sees as, oh, he can put on a really impressive match and make other people look really good. So we'll just use him a la Dolph Ziggler. That's what they did with Dolph Ziggler for I don't know how long. He's just stepped into Dolph Ziggler's shoes. Next match we have is the women's four-way match, which is Nikki Cross, Natalya, Dana Brooke, Naomi. And I'll tell you what, this was a good match. And I was very, very happy to see Dana Brooke get a pop and get her one spot off the ladder, which was a pretty damn good spot. Dana Brooke has been subpar for a while. And I don't know whether it's just her heart hasn't been in it, or she just hasn't been given the proper opportunity, or she was still a little wet behind the ears and not ready to do this. I don't know what the situation was. But Dana Brooke is now stepping up a little bit. And if she can continue to do this, she'll gain credibility. Now, she didn't win this match, but she didn't lose either, which is a really good thing. The announcing for a change in this match was excellent. Adding Alexa Bliss to it certainly helped, but they really promoted most of these characters very well. They definitely gave Dana Brooke a shot in the arm, saying she's coming along well, and they talked up her big ladder spot, and that was good. They mentioned several times how Naomi is probably the best pure athlete in the sport, and obviously they downplayed a little bit Natty, but then Renee Young played her up, saying she got the most experience, she's this, she's that, she's the other thing, and of course Nikki Cross was the long shot, but she won. And as she won, Alexa Bliss said, well, I kind of won almost in proxy, because I'm the one who chose her to replace me, and she won. So she goes down there to, I guess, congratulate Nikki Cross, and then puts the ladder in the ring so she can climb it. But you notice Nikki Cross starts to climb it first. And Alexa Bliss tells her, no, don't do that. And she climbs up, and Nikki Cross looks happy enough to sit at the bottom and hold the ladder, but there's a story to be told there. So kudos to them again. I think this is how you successfully put the branches on the trees. You accomplished more than one thing in this match. You got Dana Brooke over a little bit. You built up Naomi. You used Natty, who is really more of a trainer now than a serious threat to any major titles and things like that. She's more the den mom of the women's division, where she helps these girls along. You used her properly. You got Nikki Cross back over after almost ruining her. And you've teased a storyline. So you accomplished several things in this match. And that's what a good match does, Mike. It accomplishes more than one thing.
Yeah, it really does. And look, we talk ad nauseum about branches on a tree. But it seems to me that at times, I'm going to go off on a little tangent here. It seems like at times, instead of putting branches on the tree, the WWE is pruning the tree, taking branches off the tree, you know, yeah. And that that's never a good thing in this case. You don't want to take any potential good things away that are there. And that's what they do sometimes, is they cut things out that should be there and they put things on that lead nowhere. You know?
I agree with that, yeah. This time, however, I think they did a fairly good job.
Right, and I do like the fact that Nikki Cross won the thing, and I like what happened, because, look, it's like Nikki Cross, they're kind of playing her as this passive-aggressive type person right now.
Yeah, there's definitely something going on. And that's good enough to pique people's interest. You see how easy it is to pique people's interest, where you don't have to do anything earth-shattering. Just a little something like this, and fans are talking about, what's the deal with Nikki Cross? How's this going to end up with Alexa Bliss? Is it going to be Alexa's actually turning face, or is Nikki Cross kind of the face? What's going on? That's all you need. And in the meantime, you got a really good match out of it. You got Dana Brooke over a bit. You've got Naomi over a bit. You've sold all the right things, and you've made this ladder match look like, well, this is going to be quite interesting overall. And that's an important factor, Todd. So I think they did a really good job with this one.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, they did a really good job in that match with Dana Brooke, Natalya, Naomi, and Nikki Cross, and Alexa Bliss did a pretty good job on the commentary, and it made the match sell a little bit.
Oh, Alexa Bliss definitely did a good job. The dynamic there with Nikki Cross and Alexa Bliss is actually pretty good. They could have something pretty good here. So I'm keeping a good eye on this, because they could potentially have something good here. Now, let's go back to Mike's other point about taking branches off the tree, because this is what I think they did next up. I don't know about you, maybe I'm in the minority, but if you ask me, would you rather see Samoa Joe versus Rey Mysterio as a program, 3 or 4 match set, or a longer term feud, or Cesaro versus Rey Mysterio? I'll take Cesaro. And when I heard Rey Mysterio was fighting Cesaro, I said, well, maybe hopefully Samoa Joe interferes and there's no winner or loser, or there's a disqualification or something, because you don't want to put Cesaro down in this spot. You've just kind of started to build him up as a solo guy. We'll have a little news on that in a minute, where unfortunately it does look like Sheamus may not be retired, but maybe seriously considering retirement and cutting his schedule very, very, very sharply. And that's a shame. We'll talk about that more later. But anyway, you're supposed to be building up Cesaro a little bit, and then he's going to run into Rey Mysterio a few days before Mysterio's title match, so you know Mysterio's not losing, unless Samoa Joe comes down and does something. This was an excellent match. Excellent match. As you could imagine, any one of them would be, with Cesaro and Rey Mysterio, and they were probably not given a whole lot of time to work their match out. So you could imagine if they said, you guys are going to be feuding for a month or 2 months, the type of matches these two guys could work out between each other. And it would be superior to Rey Mysterio, Samoa Joe. Promise you. So this is, I think, what Mike means when he says, you know, you take potential branches on the tree and you clip them off. We've already seen this match now, and we've seen a definitive winner. So any rematches are like, it's not that big of a deal. You had the perfect opportunity to just have Samoa Joe. I know he's touring with the other UK group, but you had the perfect opportunity to have something happen that would build up the Samoa Joe Rey Mysterio match, but not throw Cesaro under the bus. And unfortunately, you didn't do it. So now you've clipped that branch off the tree. And I think that, unfortunately, that was a really good branch, Mike, that they could have used later.
Right. And that's the thing. I mean, these two guys, we know what they can do in the ring. We know what Cesaro can do. And look, because of his lack of size, Cesaro can, because of Mysterio's lack of size, you can very easily see Cesaro not having to use all his strength, you know, all his well, I don't want to say cyborg strength because that's how they're playing him up. But, you know, pound for pound, he's probably the strongest guy in the company. So that's a good thing. And I like the sunset bomb that Ray did. I like that. That's another move in his arsenal that he's never done before. Yeah, it was to get him, as you've said before, everything in a Rey Mysterio match is to get him to the 619 and either win or loss, all right? And I did also like the fact that Cesaro blocked it, and he eventually tried the Swiss 19 on him. So that was a cool thing.
There was a lot of cool spots in this match, and it made me wish that we were seeing a feud. It made me wish we were seeing a long-term feud. And they teased it a little bit where they said, you know, if Cesaro wins and then Ray wins, Cesaro would be the first guy up for a chance at the belt. And I'm thinking, God, I'd love to see that. I'd love to see that. Much more than I'd love to see Rey Mysterio and Samoa Joe go at it. So unfortunately, sometimes the WWE, and we spoke a little bit about this on Sunday, the WWE gives away too many matches that they should say, this is one we're not going to give away on a Raw. There are other people who can fight Rey tonight. We don't want to give away Cesaro and Rey yet because we got that in the works. But they don't. And sometimes their best matches are the ones they just give away. And they don't give any build up to, any feud, any long-term plans or storylines to. And that's a shame because this one could have had legs, I think. Most anything with Cesaro can have some legs because he's just so good in the ring that you want to see something like that. But Cesaro's contrast in style to Rey really fits, and Cesaro plays off it well. A lot of people don't. You know, if you're not a high flyer, Rey's usually good in two ways. He's usually good with another high flyer, or he's good with a big powerhouse, and it's just strictly power versus speed. But sometimes Rey's matches with a technical guy like Cesaro aren't so good, but Cesaro works very well with Rey, and Rey works very well with Cesaro. And I would have loved to have seen that get fleshed out more and not just thrown away as another match on Raw that just ends and that's it. So that's unfortunate. So let's get to the Bray Wyatt Funhouse, because this was quite interesting, wasn't it? I guess they did the big reveal, and the big reveal is that Bray Wyatt's secret that he has is that he apparently has another side to him, and that side is pretty evil. Obviously, we saw him in some kind of a weird sort of almost like a Slipknot mask, and I don't know where that's heading. I don't know whether half the time he's going to be Bray Wyatt, the sweater vest kid host, and then half the time he's going to be this deranged mask wearing crazy person, or he's not going to wear the mask. I don't know where it's heading, but they've clearly tipped their hand now that this is a heel gimmick. He's a heel. He's going to be a force to be reckoned with, I guess. And I assume we're either going to see him at some point in Money in the Bank, or we're going to see him the Monday or Tuesday after Money in the Bank. So this was an interesting funhouse, Mike. I think this is the one. I don't think there's going to be I can't see them having another one going back to normal. This looked like the conclusion.
Yeah, this looked like the conclusion. And that mask kind of reminded me of the old evil Doink masks. You know, the twisted version of the clown mask. Or, I was thinking about this earlier, if you remember the movie Spawn and the clown in Spawn.
Right.
That's what it reminded me of. That's what it reminded me of as well, you know. And it's obviously a heel gimmick. And it's obviously, it's like you could very easily see a split personality thing playing out with Bray Wyatt as well.
Yeah, I'm almost thinking that's what it has to be. And that's why he has the hurt and heel thing on his gloves and everything, is that we're going to see sort of a weird Mick Foley-ish type thing, I guess, where sometimes he's Dude Love and sometimes he's Cactus Jack. Well, I guess we're going to see. You know, I don't know if it's the best thing in the world because we've already got that to a certain extent with Finn Balor. We'll see how it plays out, Todd, but this looks like the conclusion of this Funhouse thing to me.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. It reminds me of the Twisted Metal game with the guy wearing a mask and everything, or it looks like the guy from the clown from It, too.
Yeah, it's a little bit of both. The Twisted Metal thing is a good comparison. It does remind me of Sweet Tooth from Twisted Metal. Definitely was an eerie conclusion if that's the last Funhouse we see. I just don't imagine him going back to it and then being all happy and doing little teasers and things. I think all these teasers led up to this. So this is probably the last one, unless they do something different with it and they make it an actual talk show where he has guests or so. I don't know what they're going to do with it. But to me, this felt like the conclusion. So speaking of the conclusion, let's get to the signing first, because I thought this was actually, this could have been super, super good. And two people failed. And the two people that failed were Charlotte Flair and Lacey Evans. More Lacey Evans than Charlotte Flair. Becky Lynch was great. Becky Lynch had all the right things to say. We want to talk about logic and continuity. I thought it was so brilliant when Becky Lynch says, I don't know why everybody says all the pressure is on me. I have the two belts. Nobody ever expected me to win one of them. But Lacey, this is your first big shot at a title. You can't afford to lose. You lose your first big break. What does that do to you? And Charlotte, you've had a million chances. If you don't come through again, what does that say about you? So all the pressure is really on you, not me. And I said to myself, geez, that's a jackpot. Because that's the actual logical, correct theory. You're the champion. Nobody expected you to get belt number one. You got both belts. If you lose it, okay, but you've been double champion. But the other ones, if Lacey Evans can't win her first big break match, does that ruin her push? And let's say Lacey goes first. If Charlotte can't beat Becky Lynch after Becky already went through a match, what's that do to Charlotte? So she's right, Mike, when she says the pressure technically would be on them, not so much her.
Right, and that's they're gonna play it off well. If A beats her, or if it's a tough match and A can wear her down so B can win. But again, that's one way to play it. But technically, you're right. She and Becky Lynch is right. You know, the pressure is not on Becky. Becky's already got the championships. Pressure is like being in a three-way match. Pressure is not on the champion to win. It's the pressure is on the challengers to win. You know. Just like it's going to be on these two girls to win, you know. I mean, yeah.
Yeah, I thought she made a great point, because basically she's saying, look, whichever one of you girls go first, who, you know, what happens if you don't beat me the second one? How does that make you look? And then if the first one doesn't beat me, I mean, you're both going to look like losers. One of them's going to look like never should have got a title shot, wasn't worthy, and the other one's looking like, hey, you've been given a million shots and you haven't succeeded. Now, the reason I say the two girls failed is Charlotte Flair had very little to say that made any sense. And she was too friendly to Lacey Evans, which there was no need for her to be remotely friendly to Lacey Evans. Lacey Evans, on the other hand, I'm so sad to tell you, I don't know where Lacey Evans really comes from, but that's not a Southern accent that she's doing. And if she really is from the South, then I don't know what the hell part of the South. Because that fake draw she does, and then she loses it half the time, by the way. When she starts to talk quicker, she doesn't have it anymore. And it's just annoying. It's annoying in a not a heel way. It's just annoying. And it's something I can't, it stops me from taking her seriously. I wish they would just stop it. Just stop it. Just have her talk normal, however she wants to talk. But not that slow, but it, just don't do that. It's monotone. It's nonsensical. And she had nothing good to say. She just had no retorts whatsoever. Nothing. All she'd say was, well, I'm in my dress and I don't, well, what are you talking about? So unfortunately, the back and forth we could have had, the really smart banter back and forth that we could have had, we didn't have. Becky got the better of that by a long shot. Now, they got the beat down at the end, which was okay. But I think this could have been a much better spot, Mike, if the other two girls had arisen to the occasion and had some better dialogue.
Right, and I've said it before about what they're doing with Evans. They're basically doing with Evans what Impact has been doing with Sasha or whatever, or Boudreaux, whatever her name is. And that the other girl is doing it better, you know. Impact is doing it better. So, you know, that's the thing. And like you said, they say she's from South Carolina. You know, that doesn't sound like a South Carolina accent that she's trying to pull off. You know what I mean? When Lana first showed up and she was doing her Russian accent, you bought that she was from Russia. Even though we now know she's from the States, but you bought she was from Russia because she did it so well, you know. She did that accent so well to the point that they had to tell her to stop it, you know. Maybe it's time to tell Evans to stop with the accent.
I would, because it's annoying me. Somebody gladly got into Becky Lynch's ear and told her, don't squeak anymore, you know. Don't do that high-pitched squeak, everything you got to say, because she stopped that. She did it for like 2 weeks in a row, and somebody must have said that. Don't do that anymore. That's annoying. Well, somebody's got to get Lacey Evans' ear and tell her, look, it ain't working. This long, slow draw where every word is the same monotone, it's not working for me. It lacks feeling. It lacks reality. It feels fake. It feels like she's reading her lines off the back of a napkin, and I don't like it. So it was a pretty good segment as far as the beatdown, Todd, but I think the other two girls did a lousy job as far as the dialogue.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said about Charlotte and Lacey Evans, and it was more Lacey Evans that failed more than Charlotte.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't have, if I was doing that angle, I wouldn't have Lacey Evans or Charlotte be not really friendly to each other. Be more mean, nasty to each other. I would have went that route.
Yeah, because there's really no reason. I mean, we don't know who's going first, so it's not like they're saying, oh, good, she's going to do my dirty work. They don't know for sure. So I just, you know, whatever. I know the enemy of my enemy is my friend deal, but I think they took it too far, especially when she said, well, it's good to see somebody else knows how to dress to these things. What the hell was Charlotte wearing? She was wearing stretch pants. So, I mean, it's kind of weird. We got a weird segment, too, with AJ Styles backstage saying a lot of people say that I hit Seth Rollins on purpose with that phenomenal forearm. Well, I didn't, but, you know, hey, those are the breaks. And I am going to be the champion. Sounded a little heelish and stormed off. But then Seth Rollins also, they had a bizarre thing where they showed Seth Rollins in his real youth fighting AJ Styles in much younger days and in some little small independent wrestling federation, and he said this was our only match we ever had, and I definitely looked up to AJ Styles at that point, but after this match AJ Styles is going to look up to me. Well, that's a heel thing to say too, so that's weird. AJ Styles doesn't need to look up to anybody. He's already been the SmackDown champion for I don't know how long. He's had a storied career. he's done more than Seth Rollins in his career, so I don't get where Seth Rollins is coming from with that. I don't get where they're coming from. This whole match is a little weird to me. And I wish it was one of those rare ones. I normally don't like them, but this is the absolute blueprint for a match where there shouldn't be a heel. Both of these guys should be like, this is, it's going to be an honor to wrestle you. I hope I win. I feel I'm going to win. I feel I'm the superior athlete. And this is going to be great, because then if you do have a payoff and one of them turn heel, it's unexpected. And if you don't, it's fine. I don't know why you're both going down that road where you're saying we're making them both really edgy toward each other. I don't know why. That doesn't make a lot of sense. But anyway, let's get to the main event, because we have Sami Zayn coming out to face Braun Strowman. And like I said, right away we know, well, somehow Sami Zayn's winning this. We just got to figure out how. The idea that it's a falls count anywhere leads us to believe there's going to be a lot of interference. And certainly there was. First, it was Baron Corbin who interfered unsuccessfully to a degree. There's a really nice, you know, Baron Corbin gets very little, if no credit, especially from me. But he did a really nice segment where he hit the wall out in the lobby or wherever the hell they were. And there was some kind of a screening thing on the wall. And I don't know whether he purposely did it. I think he did. I think he purposely kicked it low so it would fall on him when he fell. And that made it look really good, because that looked very real, because it was real. But I do think he knew it was going to happen. I think when he hit it, he realized, I can bring this down on me and it won't hurt. And it looked like it hurt. It was a good segment by Baron Corbin. He needs to do more of that type of stuff. That's good thinking too. You know, it makes Braun Strowman look great too, by the way. And the thing that I was thinking about through this whole match is, if Braun Strowman is really in the doghouse, they're going to make him look a little bad in this match at some point. And they didn't. I mean, he effectively fought three people, three top people, and basically was winning. And it took a ton, being put through a ladder. And then on top of that, getting the Claymore kick and having all three people pile on top of him to lose. So they certainly didn't make him look weak. And then he popped back up and put Sami Zayn through a table anyway. But the good parts of this match is this. Once again, logic works its way into it. Because if Baron Corbin and Drew McIntyre were really in a Money in the Bank ladder match for a chance to hold that briefcase, the one person they would look around and say, this is the guy who we need to get out of there, it would be Braun Strowman. So for them to say, well, we'll help Sami Zayn for a little while, because he's a lot weaker, a lot weaker opponent, a lot easier to overcome than Braun Strowman. And we get Braun Strowman out of there, our chances greatly increase. And then at the end, they throw Sami Zayn back to the wolves. They throw him back to Braun Strowman and say, do whatever you want with him. So in reality, that's not that bad of a deal. When it first happened, I'm saying, why would they be on Sami Zayn's side? But then I started realizing this is what they're trying to say. Anybody to get Strowman out of there, because Zayn is a lot easier to deal with physically. And it would be a greater chance of them winning. So it's sort of just saying, let's take out the guy that none of us seem to be able to get past. And that gives us a much better chance. So, Mike, I thought it was actually a pretty good – overall, I thought it was a pretty good idea, and I thought it had some logic to it.
Yeah, I liked it as well. And this is what I was thinking about as I was watching the segment earlier where they set up the match, and secondly, the match – in and of itself, and what happened after the match. And we said that you keep saying that the Money in the Bank kind of stunts your career, but we also say that a guy like Strowman doesn't need it or shouldn't need
right.
it. All
yep.
right. So, and that this is why I like this, because they're taking the advice that Strowman really does. They made him look extremely good by basically beating up all three guys, and he really doesn't need it. All right. So there you go. And of course, I also like what they did with AJ Styles earlier when they had they went off to commercial break, but after they were gonna have somebody interview him, and as they were going to commercial break, you saw him talking to whatever the girl's name was. It was almost like it was setting up the interview, and he was setting it. They were kind of getting on the same page, and her helping him out, maybe feeding him some stuff to say, helping him out by feeding him some stuff to say, you know. That's probably what they need to do more with AJ Styles, because he's all right on the mic, but he's not great on the mic, all right?
No, that's AJ Styles' big weakness. AJ has basically two forms. Heel AJ, who's a little bit cocky and a little bit arrogant, and nice guy AJ, who's humble and brave. And he can't juxtapose the two. He can't be like, I'm in the middle. He just doesn't have that chip that says, okay, I know what you want. You want me to come out here and say, Seth Rollins, I got the ultimate respect for you. You're obviously a great athlete. You're obviously a good champion. But for you to come out here and not shake my hand when I offered it, it's a slap in the face to someone who's been where you've been a hell of a lot longer. And I understand that everybody likes you, and I understand you're a popular guy, and I understand the crowd, you know, is going to be behind you, and that's fine. But that doesn't mean that you get to disrespect me. It doesn't mean you get to do whatever you want in my face. Because at the end of the day, I've still accomplished a whole lot more than you. And I take that as a personal insult. Then Seth Rollins could simply come back and say, look, it's just my way. And I'm not shaking hands with my opponent. You're trying to take something I want, that I won. And I can respect you as a person, but I don't have to shake your hand. I don't have to go into that fight thinking this is my friend. This is my guy I looked up to. I'm thinking of you as an enemy, because that's the way I have to, AJ. And if you say you do anything different, you're a liar. Then that's fine. Then both people got their perspective. But this back and forth sort of a thing where they're, who's a heel? Is he maybe something's going to happen? If that is your ultimate plan, then you're tipping your hand too much. And if it isn't your ultimate plan, you're not doing either guy any good service by having him do this. And you're right, AJ doesn't pull this off that well. Seth is better at that than AJ. I mean, it should be a great match. But yeah, this is one of those matches where the rhetoric hasn't been great. And it could have been a lot better. And I think this is one of those rare occasions where it would have been a lot better if it was predicated on mutual respect and not on both guys thinking they're better or needing to prove they're better. I really think this is that one match where it should have just been two guys who the fans like saying, here we go. You know, that doesn't happen very much, but in this case, I think it should have. So where are we at with Monday Night Raw? Well, it wasn't your typical UK show. The UK fans weren't off the charts. They weren't screaming and hollering and doing all kinds of crazy things like they did. They got behind Elias, and then they kind of got a little quiet for the rest of the night. But all in all, to be honest with you, this was a much better Raw than we've seen in the past month, based on the following things: logic, continuity, build up for Money in the Bank, putting branches on trees as far as a storyline is concerned, even with a girl who's not in Money in the Bank, this is what I've been saying for so long. Don't just focus everything on your next pay-per-view. Let's get some branches on that tree that you say this is going to extend past the pay-per-view or could affect the pay-per-view. And we now see some things that could affect the pay-per-view. Is Nikki Cross going to do something? Maybe. Is Braun Strowman going to retaliate in any way, shape, or form? Yeah, absolutely. You know that's going to happen. So this is throwing a monkey wrench into Money in the Bank where you're saying, okay, I don't know. I don't know who's going to win now. Could be very interesting to see how both of these Money in the Bank matches turn out. And it started a little bit of a thing with Nikki Cross where we don't know where that's going. We don't know how Sami Zayn is going to feel about being thrown under the bus by Drew McIntyre and Baron Corbin, because they did throw him back on stage. They threw him to the sharks, basically. So there are a few more branches on the tree than there were. On the other hand, you gave away Cesaro and Mysterio for nothing and gave us a solid conclusion, which I think was a mistake, and that's giving away a match. And I also think that Ricochet had no reason to be pinned dead center of the ring by Baron Corbin. I just don't know why you would do that. I mean, he had Robert Roode win once, and then Ricochet win once, and then Baron Corbin now beats Ricochet. So that Baron Corbin is being elevated for no reason because, A, nobody cares about him, and nobody's taking him seriously as a top heel. And they're not going to, folks. They're not going to. He can be everyone. They're still not going to take him seriously as a top heel until you cycle him down or switch him face for a while, get him on a good run, and then switch him. You can't just – it can't be a light switch. It can't be his jabron. He's a jabron. He's a mid-card jabron. He's a mid-card jabron. He is unstoppable. Fans don't buy that. So my initial thing was to give it dead center in the middle and maybe give it a C, flat C, maybe a C minus. But I'll tell you what, because they at least use some logic and continuity, I'm going to raise it up a little bit and I'm going to give it a C plus. I think it was a bit better than a lot of people are saying online. And I think it showed some signs that the WWE is trying to straighten up their storylines a little bit. So for me, it's a C plus. Mike, what's your thoughts?
Right. And it's going to be a C plus for me as well. And look, even with what they're doing with her, Nikki Cross, she did get her cheers. Of course, it's the hometown. It's almost a hometown crowd. But right. She did get her cheers. And, of course, we knew Becky was going to get a loud reaction from that crowd as well. So, yeah, that was good. And, of course, the ending of the Funhouse and what we're basically assuming what we're going to get from what we're possibly going to get from this character that Bray Wyatt's going to give us, that was a good thing. And, of course, I'm going to still say that the whole Strowman not being in that match and not having a shot at the Money in the Bank is a good thing for Strowman. Even though the rumors of his having backstage heat are there, it's still a good thing.
I agree with you on that, actually. And it's a good point. At the end of the night, I said to myself, if this is punishment for Braun Strowman, they've probably done him a favor. Because, A, he wasn't winning it. We already know he wasn't winning it. So that's just one more thing for Braun Strowman to lose. B, if they did have him win it, him carrying around that briefcase does him no favors. This makes him look like a guy who everyone realizes we got to eliminate or we're not winning. If he's in this thing, we got to eliminate him somehow. Otherwise, we don't have a chance. So it actually elevates his status by saying these guys are actually afraid to, you know, to fight him one-on-one. And they know his chances are greater than theirs if he's in the match. So I think that does elevate him. It also puts him in a feud, a potential feud with three people. No one wants to see him against Baron Corbin, and I don't really want to see him against Sami Zayn. If truth be told, Sami Zayn didn't get a punch in. Sami Zayn was just mauled like an animal. However, Drew McIntyre could be an interesting feud. So we'll see where that goes. So I agree with you, Mike. I think that this was actually doing Braun Strowman a favor. Getting him out of this gimmick match he wasn't going to win anyway. And even if he did, would have kind of hindered his career. Seems to me to be a favor, Todd.
Well, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, it would be a good idea have Strowman be doing something else.
And he's going to. I mean, I don't know who he's going to go after in the Money in the Bank ladder match. I don't know whether it's going to be Sami Zayn. It seems like he already got his payback on Sami Zayn. It would seem to me it would be Drew McIntyre. That would be the logic to me. Although, you know, Zayn's the one who caused all this, so I don't know where it's going, but I do know you're going to see Braun Strowman. Maybe you see him tonight. I don't know. Maybe Sami Zayn's going to show up or somebody's going to show up. And maybe they're going to, you know, who knows, with the WWE and their weird logic, they may have a match tonight that rescinds this. I don't know. But you're going to see Braun Strowman in some way, shape, or form figure into this Money in the Bank match. He's not going to sit this pay-per-view out. No way. Absolutely no way. But I'm still left with this Monday Night Raw saying the most interesting thing on it to me was the storyline between Nikki Cross and Alexa Bliss, because that actually captured my attention, and also where they're going to take Bray Wyatt. I wish I could have said the same thing about Mojo. I wish Mojo had have mauled Apollo Crews, who got hurt like an animal. Have the referee say, I've already stopped the match in your favor, but I'll reverse the damn decision if you don't stop, and have Mojo just not stop. Because then Mojo leaving that ring with a injured Apollo Crews laying there in agony would have been like, whoa, there's a statement. You know, that would have helped. I do wish, again, that Cesaro and Rey Mysterio would have been saved for a nice build-up and a nice feud, as opposed to a one-off. But all in all, in the WWE universe, if you get something reasonable like this, where you say logic and continuity had its place, and they did put a few branches on the trees, you can't be too hard on them. We've been accused by many people of being brutally, brutally hard on the WWE, but honestly, we're not. We forgive a lot of things. You can mess up one or two matches or one or two storylines or one or two gimmicks, as long as you've got some good things going that we say, well, okay, but you still gave us this. But when the whole show is crap, week after week after week after week, when the entire tree is being trimmed of branches, that's when we get aggravated. This week, it was not the case. This week, the WWE showed they can put on a decent Raw. Let's see if they can put on a decent SmackDown now. Let's see if this SmackDown lives up to it. And let's see who from Raw shows up on SmackDown. Before we say goodbye to everybody, we did tease about Sheamus. The deal with Sheamus is he has spinal stenosis and he got a concussion. He's been sitting out for a long period of time, and a lot of people backstage have been saying that they're really surprised he's been gutting it out this long. That everybody knew he was in pain. Everybody knew he wasn't 100%, and he was still gutting it out. And many people were saying, it's really shocking he's lasted this long. And now with the concussion and the spinal stenosis, he still apparently wants to come back and do a little bit, but I think it's going to be greatly reduced. A greatly reduced role, and some people are saying, you know, he's contemplating retiring. If that's the case, I know there are a lot of people out there who are down on Sheamus. I know a lot of people who said, he's boring, he's not, no big deal. He came in like a ball of fire, but then he kind of whatever. I will go on record as saying Sheamus is probably one of, if not the most underrated WWE wrestlers there has been. Whatever role you put him in, he busted his ass. He went out there and he never dogged it, man. From those ladder matches that put him out to any match you could think of, Sheamus went out there and literally, in pain or not in pain, gave 100%. And I really think that when history looks back a little bit, when Sheamus is gone from the WWE, at least as a wrestler, he'll probably have a backstage job. I do think fans are going to say, yeah, you know, in retrospect, he was a lot better than we thought. In retrospect, now that we have a chance to think about it, Sheamus was indeed very, very underrated. So this is, you know, this is sad news, Mike.
It really is. And look, the best example of what Sheamus brought to the game in my mind was the whole gimmick when they were when they had the whole Raw walk out on Raw, and they were trying to get Triple H off the off as the general manager, you know, and maybe back into the ring or something. Well, what he came out and said that the night, the Monday Night Raw after that was basically, I didn't come here to be sitting out in the parking lot because I came here, I'm coming here for thousands of miles, I'm away from my family, I came here to wrestle, I came here to fight.
Right.
And that's so, and that sold that whole, it wasn't just him, but partially that sold that whole situation with him. With him and you know, and Cena and Triple H, and of course your least favorite wrestler, CM Punk, you know.
Right.
That helped sell the situation. That's how good Sheamus was. That's how underrated he was.
And if you talk to anybody in the WWE who fought Sheamus, they're going to tell you that dude is stiff. He works hard. He doesn't dog it. He expects you to be stiff back. He doesn't complain. He's been a workhorse. And okay, maybe his main event status has shifted down a little bit over the years. But man, even with the bar, Sheamus proved that he can still get it done, and they can still he can still contribute. And I hope we still see him for a year or so, you know, even in limited duty before he has to retire. But I'm still on record, Todd, as saying years from now, when people look back on it, they're going to say Sheamus was a lot better than we gave him credit for.
Oh, you're absolutely right, Gail, about Sheamus and everything. Like you said, he was one of the most underrated wrestlers, workers actually, in the WWE. And I think you're going to see him, like, after he retires, he probably see him as a trainer for NXT or a WWE agent or something backstage.
Yeah, I'm sure he'll continue to do something. And I'm not saying he's officially retired. From what I'm hearing, he's still going to try to come back and do some things for a while. But it's going to be a limited role, and it's going to be limited time. These are the same injuries that took out, you know, Edge and a few other people. And, you know, Matt Hardy's got the same injury, and he's fighting through it a bit. But, you know, we'll see. We'll see what Sheamus' future is. But anyway, looking forward tonight to a fairly good SmackDown, hopefully. And we will be back here on Friday to give you our report. Thanks for listening.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio. Wrestling Chat Radio is a Savage Blade production.